This is Audible.
University Press Audiobooks presents Star Wars and Philosophy. More powerful than you can possibly imagine. Edited by Kevin S. Decker and Jason T. Everill. Narrated by Joseph Bevilacqua. Published by arrangement with Open Court. Introduction. The Force is with you. But you're not a Jedi yet. Now, this may shock you, but there's an arcane, little-known quotation, one rich in meaning, that appears in every Star Wars movie. I've got a bad feeling about this. In each episode of George Lucas's space opera, one of the main characters expresses this basic existential anxiety. It's an intuitive response to an undefined problem. Yet it has its root in the essentially philosophical thought that our relationship with the world is one of questioning. Questions sometimes emerge from wonder, sometimes from doubt. We stare up at the heavens, much as Luke did on Tatooine, and wonder about the extent of the universe, its origin, and its meaning. In a crisis of faith, much as Luke had when confronted by his parentage on Cloud City, we may doubt many of our firmly held beliefs and preconceptions. We search our inner selves, as did Leia when Han was being lowered into the carbon freezing chamber, and wonder about what it means to love or be virtuous. Sharing Han's skeptical worldly point of view, we may doubt that we have any existence as a mind or soul after our bodily processes are nullified by death. We comb through our junkyard, much as Watto constantly does, and wonder whether there are formulas describing the variances of the value character of the products of labor. But philosophy doesn't have a monopoly on wonder or doubt. You could be in a state of wonder, reflecting upon the birth of your twin children, or while viewing the new piece of art on your favorite hut's wall. Similarly, you could be in doubt whether the modifications to your pod racer are sufficient to allow you to be competitive in the Boonta Eve race. In these cases, no philosophical questioning needs to occur. Philosophy begins with wonder, but leads to thinking. The need to think things through, to change our mind and our environment, arises only because we get into sticky situations. Simple problems disclose their solutions almost immediately, like young Anakin's uncanny ability to fix machines. More difficult ones require us to search among alternatives for a solution. Should Obi-Wan tell Luke the truth about his father from the start, or wait until he matures? Should Qui-Gon use Jedi mind tricks on Boss Nast to secure transport from the Gungan city? Philosophical problems are often distinguished by the fact that the problem itself is unclear. We need to settle certain things about the world and ourselves, sometimes at the deepest levels, before we can blow this thing and go home. Now, Star Wars doesn't wear its philosophy on its sleeve. It doesn't make clever allusions to Alice in Wonderland or the Kabbalah in an effort to jumpstart the mind of the average viewer. Although these movies are primarily vehicles for action scenes and fantasy themes, they still involve characters reaching out and deeply within to solve problems that are significantly larger than themselves. In Star Wars, conflict is constant. But it's not fighting in the wars of the title that spurs the development of the main character's personalities. After all, wars not make one great. Instead, it's the struggle to understand and overcome deep problems of identity, truth, freedom, and the tragic side of life that defines the rise, fall, and rise again of the Skywalker family and the impact they have on allies and enemies alike. Essentially, the Star Wars movies tell a simple story of tragedy, courage, and redemption. But under this simple guise, the ageless questions of philosophy, many of which are examined in this book, derive new meaning when held against the background of its plot, colorful situations, and memorable characters. For example, are the virtues good because they are appreciated by the Jedi, or are they appreciated by the Jedi because they are good? Plato. Is Yoda a Jedi master so great that a greater one can't be conceived of? Anselm. can Anakin commit himself as a chaste, unattached Jedi Knight? But just not yet. Augustine. As absolute ruler of a galaxy-wide empire, is it better to be loved or feared? Machiavelli. Am I a mind, a body, or an overweight glob of grease? Descartes. How do we know the sun will rise on Alderaan tomorrow, even if it has done so every day since the beginning of time? Hume. If Vader looks into the abyss, doesn't the abyss also look back into him? Nietzsche. Is hell other Sith lords? Sartre. Who's scruffy looking? Solo. Here, you'll encounter thoughtful and lively discussions of these questions, but not hard and fast answers to them. Don't blame us. Some of these questions have gone unanswered for over 2,000 years. Judith Barad takes on the most ancient of these while exploring the virtues of the Jedi Order. Yoda is conceived of as both a great Jedi Master and a wise Stoic sage by William Stevens. For Chris Brown, Anakin's fall and redemption may be unavoidable if evil is needed for good to exist. Emperor Palpatine, in the eyes of Kevin Decker, is the galaxy's most masterful practitioner of Machiavellian political arts. Robert Arp finds Descartes' question about mind and body just as intriguing to ask about C-3PO and R2-D2 as of ourselves. And Jerome Donnelly concurs that droids may be more human than the humans in Star Wars. While we know the answer to the Alderaan question, Jan Eric Jones finds similar cocktail party discussions about expected cause and effect relationships still unresolved on our planet. Just what makes gravity work anyway? Of course, Darth Vader's entire life is spent looking into the metaphorical abyss of darkness and evil, and occasionally into the literal abyss of space station reactor shafts. What this says about his moral character and capacity for redemption is the fascination of many in what follows. And while Sartre's question regards three strangers trapped in a room with no exit for all eternity, Brian Cameron notes that it takes only two Sith to dance the pas de deux Hegelian dialectic that leads to mutual self-destruction. These are by no means the only philosophical questions raised and addressed by our Force-sensitive contributors. Using nature and other sentient beings merely as means to one's own ends, valuing deception as a tool to bring about the greatest good, avoiding the dehumanizing influence of technology, finding the balance between love and duty, taking a leap of faith, and achieving the enlightened mind of no mind are also defining philosophical issues in Lucas's galaxy and our own. This book came together with Socrates' thought that wisdom, for humans as well as R5 droids, begins when we discover our own bad motivators. The preceding questions and the issues they raise are deep and challenging, but thinking about them can be rewarding and even fun to those whose thinking is slightly more precise than a stormtrooper's aim. Consider this book a Kessel run for your brain, and enjoy. You get bragging rights if you listen to the whole book in less than 5 parsecs. Part 1. May the Force be with you. The Philosophical Messages of Star Wars. Chapter 1. You cannot escape your destiny. Or can you? Freedom and Predestination in the Skywalker Family by Jason T. Eberl. In The Phantom Menace, Jedi Master Qui-Gon Jinn brings a 9-year-old boy, recently released from slavery and separated from his mother, before the Jedi Council, to ask that he be trained in the ways of the Force. When the Council refuses to permit the boy's training, Qui-Gon declares, "He is the Chosen One. You must see that." To which Master Yoda replies, "Clouded this boy's future is." The boy is, of course, Anakin Skywalker, the future Darth Vader, and his being the Chosen One is based on a Jedi prophecy that refers to Anakin bringing balance to the Force. Approximately 35 years Star Wars time after this exchange, Anakin's son Luke has nearly completed his training to become a Jedi Knight, After the deaths of Obi-Wan Kenobi and Yoda, Luke will be the last of the Jedi, and the last hope for the galaxy to be saved from the tyrannical power of the dark side of the Force, exercised by Darth Vader and Emperor Palpatine. Yoda tells Luke, however, that he will be a Jedi only if he faces Darth Vader in a battle a second time, the first battle having ended badly for Luke and his extremities. Luke balks at the idea of killing his own father, but the apparition of Obi-Wan responds, "You cannot escape your destiny. You must face Darth Vader again." These scenes raise particularly interesting philosophical questions concerning freedom and moral responsibility. What does it mean for Anakin to be the Chosen One? Is it possible for him to fail to fulfill the prophecy? Is Anakin predestined to fall to the dark side and become Darth Vader? Must Luke unavoidably shoulder the burden of saving the galaxy? Or does Anakin choose to ally himself with the Emperor? Could Luke have chosen to remain on Tatooine and live out his life tending his uncle's moisture farm instead of going with Obi-Wan? Clouded this boy's future is. Anakin Skywalker's destiny seems to have been set for him since before he was even born. "Who was his father?" asks Qui-Gon after sensing Anakin's incredible Force potential. His mother Shmi replies, "There was no father. I gave birth to him. I raised him. I can't explain how it happened." The realization then dawns on Qui-Gon that Anakin may be the Chosen One of Jedi prophecy. Qui-Gon is a true believer in Anakin's destiny from that moment on, and with his dying breath, insists that Obi-Wan train Anakin to become a Jedi Knight. Qui-Gon's belief in Anakin, however, is just that, a belief. And Master Yoda points out the uncertainty of Anakin's future. For us, the future is also clouded. Typically, despite some people's belief in crystal balls or tarot cards, we don't have visionary insights into what's to come. When Luke has a vision of Han and Leia suffering on Bespin, he asks Yoda, "Will they die?" If any Jedi is able to see clearly into the future, it should be the oldest, wisest, greenest, and most powerful of all of them. But even Yoda can only reply, "Difficult to see. Always in motion is the future." Perhaps it's this lack of certainty about our knowledge of the future that allows us to freely choose what actions we'll take to determine the future for ourselves, as Luke courageously, but perhaps also foolishly, chooses to end his training early and leave Dagobah to help his friends. Of course, we typically don't equate ignorance with freedom. Suffering under the delusion that you're free because you don't know your own future isn't nearly as good as actually having an indeterminate future, a future not already set in stone. But at least one individual in the Star Wars galaxy seems to have had a pretty clear idea of what lay ahead in the future. Whoever wrote the Jedi prophecy that Anakin fulfilled when he, as Vader, killed Emperor Palpatine in Return of the Jedi. This visionary, at least in this case, had a God's eye view of the future and its perspective that raises questions regarding Anakin's freedom, as well as our own. In our galaxy, many religious believers, particularly those in the Jewish, Christian, and Islamic traditions, conceive of God as omniscient, all-knowing, and understanding God's infinite knowledge to include infallible knowledge of the future. If God knows from all eternity that I would be writing this chapter right now, it might seem that there's no way it could be false that I'm now writing this chapter. When I was sitting in my lazy boy chair about 30 minutes ago, wondering whether I should work on my chapter or watch Attack of the Clones on DVD with my 5.1 surround sound system on full blast, because my wife is out with her girlfriends tonight, God already knew what I was going to choose. And since God can't be wrong, it seems I couldn't have chosen to watch my DVD instead of working on my chapter. Was I free in my choice to work on my chapter? To approach this question, we have to understand a little more about God's nature. Both St. Augustine, 354 to 430 AD, and St. Thomas Aquinas, 1225 to 1274, two very influential Christian philosophers of the Middle Ages, reason that there isn't much that we can definitively say about God's nature, since it is far beyond our comprehension. Nevertheless, There are certain things they're sure that God is not. For example, both hold that God is not in time. Aquinas relies on Aristotle, who argued that time is the measure of motion. There can be no time if there's no motion, and there can be no motion if there's no universe with things in it that are in motion, just as the force requires living things in order to exist. God, though, must exist outside the universe, because God created the universe. This also means that God could exist even if no universe existed. Since time requires the existence of a universe that contains things in motion, and God could exist without such a universe existing, God must exist outside of time. God is eternal. What would eternal existence, living outside of time, be like? We experience time in a linear fashion. One moment passes to the next, which passes to the next, and so on. When Han Solo makes the Kessel Run in less than 5 parsecs, a measure of distance, not time, he must travel the first parsec before he can travel the second, before he can travel the third, and so on. This, of course, requires that he travel for one period of time, before he can travel for a second period of time, before he can travel for a third. You get the idea. This is the nature of time from our perspective. From the eternal perspective, though, every moment in time occurs at once. Imagine seeing every frame of all 6 Star Wars films at the same instant, not one after another. Like scenes on the page of a comic book, you would see Han shooting Greedo and being frozen in carbonite at the same time. If someone could see from this eternal perspective, he would know the future, because from this perspective, the past, present, and future are all equally present to the observer. For us linear observers, the future doesn't exist. Neither does the past, which we simply recollect. We can perceive only the present. Aquinas writes, God knows future events still undetermined. Now, God knows such events not only in their causes, but also as actual happenings. Though they happen one after another, God's knowledge of them happening is not itself successive, like ours, but instantaneously whole. His knowledge, like his existence, is measured by eternity, which in one and the same instant encompasses all time. So his gaze is eternally focused on everything in time as on something present and known to him with certainty, even though it is future and undetermined in relation to its cause. Does the eternal observer's knowledge of the linear observer's future determine that future? Assuming that the eternal observer can't be mistaken in his perceptions, it would seem that it does. How can I change the future that is already known by someone who can't be wrong about it? Assuming that the prophecy is true, and Anakin is indeed the chosen one, it seems he can't avoid bringing balance to the Force. He couldn't freely choose not to kill the Emperor. Some philosophers would answer that Anakin does not freely choose to throw the Emperor down the second Death Star's reactor shaft. They assume that the Eternal Observer's knowledge determines his fate. Whatever has been correctly prophesied must happen. But what determines the Eternal Observer's knowledge? What causes the prophecy of the Chosen One to exist in the first place? When Anakin, as Vader, is watching his son being tortured and slowly killed by the Emperor, it's evident that he's wrestling with a moral choice between devotion to his master and love for his son. John Williams' dramatic score reaches a dark crescendo as it seems all hope for saving the galaxy from tyranny is about to be lost. But then the music suddenly shifts to the triumphal Force theme as Anakin makes his choice and destroys the Emperor, thereby saving his son, restoring freedom to the galaxy, and bringing the Force back into balance, all at the cost of his own life. It may be that Anakin's choice determines the Eternal Observer's knowledge of what he'll do, not the other way around. If Anakin hadn't chosen to destroy the Emperor and thus fulfill the prophecy might not have existed in the first place. The prophecy that seems to determine the ultimate course of Anakin's future may itself be determined by the ultimate course of Anakin's future that results from his choices. This possibility implies counter-temporal causality. That in this case, a future choice causes past knowledge, whereas we typically think of past events causing future events. But from the Eternal Observer's perspective, Anakin's choice and his knowledge expressed in the prophecy are both present. So, this isn't a case of counter-temporal causality. Anakin's choice causes the Eternal Observer's knowledge, in the same way that my pushing a ball across the floor causes the ball's movement. Both events occur simultaneously. Augustine compares the Eternal Observer's knowledge of the future to our mundane knowledge of the past. Why cannot God justly punish what he does not force to be done, even though he foreknows it? Your recollection of events in the past does not compel them to occur, in the same way God's foreknowledge of future events does not compel them to take place. As you remember certain things that you have done, and yet have not done all the things that you remember, so God foreknows all the things of which he himself is the cause, and yet he is not the cause of all that he foreknows. This is not the only way of responding to the problem of the Eternal Observer. We've been assuming that the Eternal Observer, personified by the classical theistic notion of God, has infallible knowledge of the future. But maybe there are no such Eternal Observers and there's no time beyond the present moment that we linear observers are currently experiencing. When Yoda asserts, "Always in motion is the future," he may not have been speaking merely from a linear perspective, but reflecting a metaphysical fact. The future isn't set because it doesn't yet exist. When it does, we call it the present. So nothing called the future really exists.
Everything is proceeding as I had foreseen.
Even if the future doesn't exist until it becomes the present, a powerful person in the present may attempt to determine what the future will be. In The Phantom Menace, Darth Sidious puts into motion a plan to take revenge on the Jedi and gain tyrannical control of the galaxy. In Revenge of the Sith, the plan comes to fruition as Sidious becomes the Galactic Emperor, and in Return of the Jedi, he prepares to sweep away for good the rebellion that threatens his empire and convert the last of the Jedi to the dark side of the Force. After arriving on the second Death Star and seeing his vast Imperial army and fleet amassed, he boasts to Vader,
"Everything is proceeding as I had foreseen."
Insert evil cackle. But in The Empire Strikes Back, he warns Vader that Luke
could destroy us.
Vader shares this prediction with Luke when he first tries to persuade him to the dark side, but obviously has slightly different designs, saying,
"You could destroy the Emperor. He has foreseen this. It is your destiny."
We all know how the story goes. Things don't proceed as the Emperor had foreseen. Otherwise, he would not have laughed in such a gleefully wicked manner after boasting to Vader. The Emperor tries his best to act as the grand puppet master, pulling everyone's strings. But people aren't marionettes, and the Emperor appears truly shocked and chagrined when Luke, striking down his father in rage, then throws away his lightsaber and declares that he'll never turn to the dark side. "You failed, Your Highness! I am a Jedi! Like my father before me." Caught off guard by this sudden assertion of free choice, the Emperor can only declare solemnly,
"So be it, Jedi."
For some religious believers, God can pull certain strings in the world to make it turn out as he wills. God designed the universe with all the physical causal laws that we live by every day, such as gravity, inertia, centrifugal force, the fact that all light beers are tasteless, and so forth. But does God also pull the strings of human will? Does he, for example, truly harden hearts, as the Bible says he did to the Egyptian Pharaoh, Exodus 4:21? This is an important question for religious believers who also think that human beings are morally responsible for their actions. Do good and you go to heaven. Do evil and you go to hell. If God hardened Pharaoh's heart so that he wouldn't let the Israelites leave Egypt, does he deserve his punishment when God drowns the Egyptians in the Red Sea? For religious philosophers, such as Augustine and Aquinas, God may infuse grace into the hearts and minds of those who invite it, and deny it to those who refuse it. And this grace may influence a person's will, usually toward goodness, But the reception of grace requires the compliance of the person's own will. The only way to receive God's grace is not to reject it, and someone can avoid being infused with grace by willing against it. Thus, by creating human beings with freedom of will, God limits His own power to control our lives. God can pull only those strings in our will that we let Him, though He can still pull the strings of everything around us. In this sense, God has about as much power over us as the emperor does over Luke and Vader. The emperor believes he has a power over others' wills that he can't have, because although he's a powerful Sith Lord, he's ultimately a limited mortal being. God, on the other hand, is omnipotent, all-powerful, and thus could have exercised total control over everything he has created, including us. For example, God could have designed us as mindless automatons, just as the Kaminoans modified the genetic structure of the Republic's clone troopers to make them less independent and truly obedient, taking any order without question. But God chose to create us with freedom of will, and thereby elected to limit His own power to pull our strings. Though omnipotent, even God can't control us because of the way He created us. This allows us to be responsible for our moral choices and merit whatever reward or punishment we deserve. But even if there might be no future to be determined, and also no infallible cosmic puppet master, we haven't escaped the possibility of fate. It could be that the mere truth of what philosophers call future contingent propositions, statements about the future, requires that events unfold in a determinate fashion. Various views of fate actually predate much of the religious philosophy we've been talking about. The ancient Sumerian culture, the Homeric epics, Iliad and Odyssey, and the best Greek tragedies all concern themselves with fate. In his De Interpretatione, Aristotle raises the issue of fate by noting that one can truthfully say at any time that either there will be a sea battle tomorrow or there won't be. Now, this is about as uninformative as a statement can get. Imagine a rebel strategist telling Admiral Akbar and Lando Calrissian, "Either you will destroy the Death Star when you reach Endor, or you won't." Nevertheless, Aristotle continues, "If someone says there will be a sea battle tomorrow, she may be right, for there may indeed be a sea battle tomorrow. But she also may be wrong, for there may not be a sea battle tomorrow." Let's say there is a sea battle, and the person who says so is right even though she lacks the benefit of omniscient foreknowledge. The fact that the proposition, "there will be a sea battle tomorrow," is true today seems to determine that there will indeed be a sea battle tomorrow. How could there not be unless the proposition is false? If it was true at the time of the Phantom Menace that Obi-Wan would later die at Vader's hands in A New Hope, then Obi-Wan must die at that time. But Obi-Wan ceased fighting, held up his lightsaber, and allowed Vader to kill him, an apparently free but mysterious action. One way to answer this apparent fatalism is by noting once again where the chain of causality starts. If the proposition Obi-Wan will die at Vader's hands is true 30-plus years before it happens, it doesn't necessarily cause Obi-Wan's death. Rather, Obi-Wan's choice to allow Vader to cut him down is what makes the proposition true, and also makes the proposition Obi-Wan will live to see the Emperor defeated false. Another way is to deny, as Aristotle does, that future contingent propositions have any truth value whatsoever. They are neither true nor false when they are spoken. Such propositions become true or false only when the event to which they refer occurs or fails to occur.
He's got to follow his own path.
But what if Obi-Wan did not freely choose to allow Vader to kill him because he had no real alternatives? Many philosophers, typically referred to as libertarians, would agree that Obi-Wan isn't free if he can't choose to do otherwise. Vader seems to suffer from this lack of freedom in a sympathetic scene from Return of the Jedi, when, after Luke makes a valiant effort to reach the goodness he still senses in his father, Vader declares,
"You don't know the power of the dark side. I must obey my master."
It is too late for me, son.
And indeed, the Force seems to work this way. Qui-Gon argues, with reference to Anakin, finding him was the will of the Force. I have no doubt of that. And he later explains to Anakin how the midichlorians present in all life forms are, constantly speaking to us, telling us the will of the Force. If the will of the Force determines the fate of the universe, perhaps even directly intervening to cause Anakin's conception, as Qui-Gon surmises, then it doesn't seem as if Anakin, or any other being subject to the Force, has alternate possibilities of action. They must act as the Force wills. If true, then the only possibly free beings in the Star Wars galaxy are those who don't subject themselves to the will of the Force. The paradigmatic example being Han Solo, who emphatically asserts, "No mystical energy field controls my destiny." Han has lived his entire life as a free spirit, wandering the galaxy carrying spice shipments for Jabba the Hutt, breaking speed records in the Millennium Falcon, and trying to avoid any Imperial entanglements. Han exercises his freedom of choice most assertively when he decides to take his reward for rescuing Princess Leia and leave the Rebel Alliance behind, instead of helping them destroy the Death Star. Luke confronts him, but Han's will to leave is strong, and simply gives Luke a half-hearted, "May the Force be with you." Luke's less naive sister Leia is equally disappointed with Han's decision, but understands that there's nothing they can do to stop him.
He's got to follow his own path. No one can choose it for him.
We know, of course, that Han eventually changes his mind and chooses to come to Luke's rescue at the last instant, freeing him to use the Force to destroy the Death Star. Han, unlike Anakin and Luke, appears to have alternative possibilities in determining his own future, which most libertarian philosophers take to be fundamental to the definition of freedom. Enlightenment-era philosopher John Locke, 1632-1704, however, notes that freedom may not require having alternative possibilities. Suppose a man be carried, whilst fast asleep, into a room where is a person he longs to see and speak with, and be there locked fast in, beyond his power to get out, he awakes, and is glad to find himself in so desirable company, which he stays willingly in, i.e., prefers his stay to going away. I ask, is not this stay voluntary? I think nobody will doubt it. And yet being locked fast in, 'tis evident he is not at liberty to stay. He has not freedom to be gone. What makes this person in Locke's story free, despite having no alternative to staying in the locked room, is that he desires to be there. He perceives the pleasurable company he's in, and desires to stay in that pleasurable company. So long as he desires to stay in the room, his remaining there is freely chosen, so says Locke. If, however, he decides to leave the room and finds the door locked, then his remaining in the room has been forced upon him against his will to leave, and he's thereby not free. Freedom, then, may ultimately depend upon a person's will, whether he desires to do one action or another, whether he desires to do good or evil, and his ability to do whatever he wills. In demonstrating why human beings act freely when they commit evil, and aren't caused to do so by God's will or eternal foreknowledge, Augustine contends that desire is the foundation of all evil that results from a person's disordered will. Each evil man is the cause of his own evil doing. Augustine describes a person as having an inordinate desire when he focuses too much on temporal things. Good persons live by turning their love away from those things which cannot be possessed without the risk of losing them, while evil persons try to remove obstacles so that they may safely rest in their enjoyment of these things and so live a life full of evil and crime, which would be better named death. This description certainly fits Anakin, who is unable to turn his love away from his mother and from Padme, both of whom he loses. When he expresses his frustration at being unable to save his mother from the Sand People, he vows to become the most powerful Jedi ever, and to learn to stop people from dying. George Lucas, the man who knows the most about Anakin's psychology, notes, "The problem that Anakin has in this whole thing is he has a hard time letting go of things. As he sought more and more power to try to change people's fate so that they're the way he wants them, that greed goes from trying to save the one you love to realizing you can control the universe. It is Anakin's desire to control things that are ultimately outside of his control, in defiance of the natural order of the universe, established by the will of the Force, which leads to his moral downfall. And this desire stems from Anakin himself. What each man chooses to pursue and to love lies in his own will." On this view, it doesn't matter whether Anakin has the possibility to act as he wills. Even if something prevents Anakin from, say, marrying Padme on Naboo, imagine that their ship blows up on the way there. He has already freely willed to violate the Jedi Code and is morally responsible for that volition. So despite the appearance that Anakin has no alternative possibilities with regards to being the Chosen One and destroying the Emperor, he's nonetheless free in his choosing to ally himself with the dark side, because that choice stems from his own will, his own inordinate desires. This one, a long time have I watched. Luke, like his father, carries the burden of future expectation on his shoulders. While Anakin is the child of prophecy, Luke is both the new and last hope for restoring freedom to the galaxy. But to restore galactic freedom, Luke must first exercise his individual freedom. As he discovers in the cave on Dagobah, Luke has the same potential to allow inordinate desire to control his will and turn him to the dark side. Both Vader and the Emperor attempt to tap into Luke's desire to destroy, and each try to turn that desire to their own advantage. But ultimately, only Luke can give in to that inordinate desire. Only he can turn his own will to the dark side. After all, what cause of the will could there be, except the will itself? And while both Yoda and Obi-Wan have put great faith in Luke from the time he was born, even they can only watch Luke's life unfold and help train him as a Jedi. Despite their good intentions, neither has the power to bend Luke's will, as we see in The Empire Strikes Back, when they plead with him not to leave Dagobah before his training is completed. Luke is much like his father, as he's inclined to allow inordinate desire to control his will. But he's also like Han Solo, because he's not wholly subject to the will of the Force. When he asks Obi-Wan if the Force controls your actions, Obi-Wan responds, "Partially, but it also obeys your commands." In a deleted scene from Attack of the Clones, Mace Windu counsels Obi-Wan regarding Anakin, "You must have faith that he will take the right path." Anakin has control over his own destiny, and even the Jedi Masters are powerless to prevent what he wills. Unfortunately, Anakin doesn't take the right path, but his son does, despite similar obstacles. In our own lives, it's important to ask which forces are attempting to bend our will. What desires have the potential to become inordinate and be allowed to take over our will? And we must also be conscious of the control we have over our own will and desires. Even if there is an eternal observer keeping watch over us, or a puppet master pulling the universe's strings around us, we can pull our own strings, and thereby determine what the eternal observer knows and limit what the puppet master can accomplish. We are radically free, and thus responsible for what we choose to will. And since my wife is still out with the girls, I think I'll exercise my radical freedom to watch Attack of the Clones and wake up the neighbors, comfortable in the knowledge that, que sera, sera, whatever will be, will be. Chapter 2. Stoicism in the Stars. Yoda, the Emperor, and the Force. William O. Stevens. Stoicism is the ancient Greek philosophy that originated in the 3rd century BCE in the Stoa, or porch where Zeno of Citium taught in Athens. Stoicism counsels acting virtuously and without emotional disturbance while living in harmony with fate. But why care about Stoicism today? For one thing, Zeno's followers, the Stoics, exerted enormous influence on Roman culture, Christianity, and Western philosophy for centuries. Today, Stoicism continues to receive a lot of attention from philosophers, novelists, soldier politicians, and psychologists. This is because Stoic ideas provide an effective strategy for addressing conflicts and kinds of adversity faced in the real world. Star Wars fans, too, can benefit from some Stoicism. Understanding the Force is key to understanding the Star Wars universe, since how the Force is conceived, used, or ignored by the characters goes a long way to determining their identities, allegiances, and goals. What is it that makes the Force and the discipline necessary to master it so compelling to figures like Luke, Yoda, and the Emperor? Stoicism helps reveal both the logic of the light side of the Force and the logic of the dark side. How Yoda and the Emperor understand the Force radically shapes their moral characters and drives their actions. A brief study of Stoicism will allow us to understand why Yoda and the Emperor can be so devoted to contrary sides of the Force. Appearance versus reality. Jester or Jedi Master. When Luke and R2 arrive on Dagobah and the Empire strikes back, Luke instinctively brandishes his blaster when they are startled by an unthreatening, wizened, olive-skinned dwarf clad in rags. "Away, put your weapon! I mean you no harm," the cringing dwarf pleads. With his quirky sense of humor, Yoda remarks that Luke has found someone. Though Luke doesn't realize he has found the very Jedi Master he is looking for. But while this puny goblin assures Luke he can help him, Luke doubts him. Luke explains that he is looking for a great warrior. Laughing, Yoda responds, "Wars not make one great." This remark is ironic, since Yoda is Sanskrit for warrior. Yoda certainly looks nothing like a great warrior. Yoda then acts like a silly beggar. He finds, nibbles on, and discards an untasty snack bar in Luke's supplies. When he fights over a tiny power lamp with R2, Yoda looks even sillier. Luke is impatient to find the Jedi Master, but the goofy goblin wants to eat first. So our first impression of Yoda is of a solitary, harmless, vulnerable, shabby, hungry geezer with a quirky sense of humor and an odd manner of speech. Yoda's appearance inspires no awe at all. Contrast this image with the first appearance of Darth Vader in A New Hope and the Emperor in Return of the Jedi. Moments after the first wave of stormtroopers, all clad in white armor, have blasted their way onto Princess Leia's ship, a tall, dominating figure in a face-concealing helmet, cape, and armor, all in black, strides confidently amidst the victorious stormtroopers. He issues commands in a deep, rasping, mechanical, monotone voice. Vader appears menacing, invulnerable, and powerful, surrounded by his minions who instantly obey his every command. This dark, imposing man-machine inspires awe. He is obviously a great warrior and a very powerful leader. As the saga unfolds, we discover that this great warrior obeys an even more powerful master. Massed ranks of Imperial officers and stormtroopers honor the arrival of the Almighty Emperor on the second Death Star when he first appears in the flesh. Luke's first impressions of Yoda are of a jester, not a Jedi. Luke fails to see past appearances to the reality of Yoda's virtues. Yet the virtues that emerge from Yoda's words and actions reveal him as a Jedi Master. Similarly, the virtues of the Stoic wise man are precisely what enable him to be happy, no matter what. What specific virtues does Yoda display? When Yoda offers to take Luke to the Jedi Master he seeks, Luke insists that it be done immediately. Instead, Yoda suggests that they first eat. When Luke objects, Yoda replies, "For the Jedi, it is time to eat as well." Timeliness is a virtue for Yoda. Why is it a virtue? Because just as what one does and how one does it matters, so too when one acts matters. Whereas Luke often doesn't act appropriately for the moment, Yoda's acts are timely. Timeliness is a key virtue for a Jedi, as it is for the stoic wise man. While Yoda prepares their first meal together, Luke is impatient to be brought to the Jedi Master. Yoda urges Luke to have patience, a virtue Yoda has cultivated over centuries. Luke's impatience turns into frustration and vexation. Disappointed, Yoda addresses Obi-Wan Kenobi's disembodied presence.
I cannot teach him.
The boy has no patience. It finally dawns on Luke that this weird, elderly goblin is the Jedi Master himself. Appearance has blinded Luke to reality. Yoda criticizes Luke for his inability to focus on his present situation. Yoda says, all his life he has looked away, to the future, to the horizon, never his mind on where he was, what he was doing. Yoda dismisses Luke's lust for adventure and excitement as things a Jedi does not crave. Yoda is never distracted by frivolous desires for adventure or excitement, nor does he worry about things beyond his control. This, too, is characteristic of the Stoic, who enjoys equanimity and peace of mind. Yoda focuses on the task at hand and how to act in the present, whether consulting with the other Jedi, eating, training Luke, or resting. Focus on the present is another Jedi virtue, and one which is shared by the Stoic. Yoda cautions the young Anakin that a Jedi must have the deepest commitment, the most serious mind. This warning is repeated decades later to Luke. Yoda's mental seriousness, deep commitment to the lifelong Jedi pursuit of mastering the Force, and rejection of frivolity, however, do not mean that he's humorless. Yoda indulges his sense of humor in allowing Luke to be blinded by his presumptions about what a Jedi Master looks like. Yoda observes in The Empire Strikes Back that there is much anger in Luke, like there was in his father. Yet Yoda, in contrast, never gets angry. As he says, fear is the path to the dark side. Fear leads to anger. Anger leads to hate. Hate leads to suffering. Wiser words are never spoken in all of Star Wars. Later, Yoda tells Luke, anger, fear, aggression, the dark side of the Force are they. This is the logic of the light side of the Force. 1. Fear leads to anger, then to hate, then to aggression. 2. Aggression leads to the suffering of both aggressor and victim. That Yoda is never seen to suffer implies that he is never fearful, angry, hateful, or aggressive. The Stoic wise man, just like Yoda, lacks the vices of fear, anger, hatred, and aggression. But does rejection of aggression require pacifism? When can a Jedi fight? Yoda says, a Jedi uses the Force for knowledge and defense, never for attack. Although Yoda actively defends and protects when necessary, he lacks the vice of aggression. Yoda wisely knows that fear, anger, hate, and aggression lead to suffering and the dark side of the Force, and his wisdom allows him to tell the difference between the light side and the dark side of the Force. Yoda explains to Luke that he will know the difference between the two when he is calm, at peace, passive. Stoicism and the virtues of the sage. Several elements of Stoicism help us to better understand Yoda's virtues. The Stoics believed that the goal of life was to live in agreement with nature. This meant several things. First, nature, that is, the cosmos as a whole, is structured and well-ordered through and through, according to logos reason. As I will explain more fully, logos is akin to the Force. Second, to live in agreement with nature requires embracing and making good use of all events that unfold in this rationally structured universe. So living in harmony with cosmic events entails living in agreement with our distinctive human nature. While we have various functions in common with other animals, the Stoics believe that reason is our special, distinctive, natural endowment. So to live well is to harmonize our distinctive human reason as individuals with the larger rational structure of the universe. The Stoic Epictetus, CA 55 to CA 135 CE, says, God has introduced humans into the world as spectators of himself and of his works, and not only as spectators, but interpreters of them. It is therefore shameful that humans should begin and end where irrational creatures do. We ought rather to begin there, but to end where nature itself has fixed our end, and that is in contemplation and understanding and a way of life in harmony with nature. The Stoics understood the perfection of reason to be virtue itself, so the successful, good human life is the life in agreement with virtue. Virtue is the one and only necessary and sufficient condition for the happy life, according to the Stoics. Vice guarantees misery. Because of this, they believe that virtue is the only thing that is really good, and that vice is the only thing that is really bad. Knowledge of what is really good, what is really bad, and what is neither, they thought, is crucial to living well. Moreover, the Stoics believe that all the virtues, wisdom, justice, courage, self-control, piety, and generosity, were really just perfected reason applied to various spheres of conduct. Reason leads the Stoic to concentrate his mind on what is up to him and under his control, rather than worrying about, fearing, anticipating, or being distracted by anything that is beyond his control and not up to him. Timely behavior, for example, is under one's control and is a virtue of the Stoic. This mindful concentration on what is within one's control allows the Stoic to be calm and even-tempered, no matter what happens, and to be high-minded and noble of heart by rising above trivial or frivolous matters that plague non-Stoics. In addition, the Stoic seeks to free himself from all passion, excitation, and frivolity in order to be able to apply his reason reliably. The Stoics understood passion, pathos in Greek, to be a disturbing, unhealthy movement of the soul. That is why a sickness of the soul is called a pathology. The Stoic who has succeeded in freeing himself from all disturbances to his reason has become good. The Stoics believed that there are no degrees of goodness. Until a man is good, he is bad. For the Stoics, the good man thus functions as a prescriptive ideal known as the perfect wise man, or sage. The sage's soul is steady, orderly, completely virtuous, and it does not suffer from any passion. However, the Stoic sage is not devoid of all emotion. The Stoics believe that there were three good emotional states that were not pathological movements of the soul. Namely, benevolence, wishing someone good things for his own sake, joy, in virtuous deeds, and caution, reasonable wariness. Clearly, Yoda has many Stoic traits. Yoda is free from the emotions that subvert reason. Yoda is not reckless or impatient, as Luke is at first, nor is Yoda frivolous. Like a Stoic, Yoda never becomes perturbed or excited. Most significantly, Yoda does not succumb to anger. The ancient Roman Stoic Seneca, ca. 3-65 CE, called anger the most hideous and frenzied of all the emotions. Seneca thought angry people were insane, saying of anger, "Oblivious of decency, heedless of personal bonds, obstinate and intent on anything once started, closed to reasoning or advice, agitated on pretexts without foundation, incapable of discerning fairness or truth. It most resembles those ruins which crash in pieces over what they have crushed." Yoda also exhibits the positive emotions allowed to a Stoic. Since Yoda doesn't fear, get angry, or hate, he doesn't suffer. Yoda concentrates on what is up to him and what he can do in the present. He thus enjoys impassivity, the lack of disturbing passions the Stoics called apatheia. Yoda is calm and even-tempered. He can tell the difference between the good and bad sides of the Force and knows what is good, what is bad, and what is neither. Knowing that only virtue is good, only vice is bad, and everything else is really indifferent to one's happiness in the heart of Stoic wisdom. Yoda is also benevolent and cautious. His quirky humor displays a quasi-Stoic joy. His odd wit and unusual pattern of speech humanize him by tempering his seriousness. One of the ancient Greek names for the Stoic sage is Spodaios, which means serious person. perfecting one's mind by conditioning it to make only rational judgments about all things that occur is a very serious business that requires commitment. The Stoics call this arduous training and discipline practice ascesis, from which we get the word ascetic, a person devoted to austere self-discipline. Yoda, too, displays the virtue of commitment and lives an ascetic lifestyle in both his sparse quarters in the Jedi Temple on Coruscant and his simple mud hut on Dagobah. The Stoics believed that the wise man, the virtuous person, was as rare as the phoenix, due to the difficulty of disciplining oneself to make consistently rational judgments. Such mental discipline, they thought, required an entire life to cultivate. That is why the Stoics distinguish between those who are simply vicious and those who are making progress toward virtue, though still suffering from vice. Even if becoming a sage turns out to be unachievable over the course of an entire life, progress toward this ideal state is possible. Someone who is progressing toward virtue they called a progressor. Similarly, Luke can be seen as a progressor. He is an apprentice, first of Obi-Wan, then of Yoda, and he strives to learn the ways of the Force and become a Jedi. To recap, the virtues the Jedi shares with the Stoic sage are patience, timeliness, deep commitment, seriousness, as opposed to frivolity, calmness, as opposed to anger or euphoria, peacefulness, as opposed to aggression, caution, as opposed to recklessness, benevolence, as opposed to hatred, joy, as opposed to sullenness, passivity, as opposed to agitation, and wisdom. Given all these virtues, Yoda certainly resembles what the ancient Stoics described as the sage, the ideal person who has perfected his reason and achieved complete wisdom. In contrast with Luke's youth and inexperience, Yoda has had over 8 centuries to study and attune himself to the Force. The perfection of the Stoic sage's character in his human reason mirrors the perfection of all of nature, which the Stoics believed was coherently structured through and through. The sage acts in accord with and accepts events that occur in the world, since his personal reason and his will harmonize with cosmic reason and fate. The sage understands the principles of regularity by which the universe operates. His knowledge of nature thus guides his conduct. Is this similar to following the Force? Yoda says that life creates the Force and makes it grow, and that the energy of the Force surrounds people and binds them, and that it pervades the entire physical world. This description resembles the ancient Stoics' idea of the breath that pervades all objects in the cosmos. This breath, composed of the elements air and fire, is the sustaining cause of all bodies, and it controls the growth and development of all living bodies. It holds the cosmos together as the passive principle of all matter. The active principle pervading the cosmos is the reason that it is the one and the same as nature, fate, providence, and the Greek god Zeus. When Yoda uses the telekinetic power of the Force to lift Luke's X-Wing fighter from the swamp on Dagobah, he uses the power of his mind to move matter. A Jedi Master, it seems, while not omnipotent, can use the active power of reason to move passive matter. In this modest way, Jedi who use telekinesis act something like Zeus or Providence, as understood by the Stoics. Telekinesis, psychic perception of events that are distant in space and time, and the luminous afterlife of dead Jedi constitute the mystical side of the Force. The Stoics emphasized that ethics, physics, the study of nature, and logic, the study of speech, language, and argument, are the 3 interconnected branches of philosophy. So, does Stoic philosophy allow for the mystical? The mystical element of the Force conflicts with the Stoics' understanding of the physical world. Yoda tells Luke, "Luminous beings are we, not this crude matter." This is confirmed by the scenes that show the deceased Obi-Wan, Yoda, and Anakin as non-physical, yet luminous, visible disembodied spirits. Since the Emperor was a master of the dark side, would he too continue to exist as a luminous disembodied spirit, or would he be a dark, shadowy, disembodied spirit? For the Stoics, these kinds of metaphysical quandaries are ludicrous. The Stoics were physicalists who believed that souls, minds, were just as physical as flesh and blood bodies. They reasoned that since one's soul casually interacts with one's body, and one's body is physical, then one's soul must be physical too. So the Stoics rejected the notion of non-physical souls, or minds or spirits, that are the luminous beings Yoda claims to be the real Luke and Yoda. For the Stoics, a person is destroyed when his body is destroyed, whereas deceased Jedi apparently enjoy an afterlife, which allows them to speak with, see, and be seen by the living. While the naturalism of Stoicism rules out supernatural disembodied spirits,